We sent half a truckload to Willie Nelson's birthday party 2 years ago. All these musicians love that, you know, Steph Curry buys our sweet potatoes. Basketball players had it. Chris, he had them at a big party in Miami. Sends me all these photos, all these, and snacks have been a big culprit in this for 30 years. They've been known as junk food. I mean, if you look at the back of the label of a potato chip, right, it's 40%+ fat, which is more than bacon or ground beef or anything. Nobody ever questions it. Well, I knew how to get rid of all that. I've seen a lot of really dark days. And if your metric is money, as you start a business, you're not going to last very long.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Duck Pond Podcast. Today on the show, we have Philip Kosak, a food scientist turned into a snack rebel. After 40 years of building better-for-you snack brands for others, he decided to do it himself and launched Wicked Crisps, a veggie chip company that's baked and built on purpose. Philip, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. I enjoy the opportunity.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have you on. So before we dive into Wicked Crisps, I would love to hear a little bit about who Philip is, and especially before this journey.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, and I'll try to keep it really brief. So I'm not a typical, I think I was a born entrepreneur, which may be a curse. I don't know yet. But I grew up in a world where while other people were playing, I was busy figuring out how to do a lemonade stand or this or that. I was always in my mind finding some clever way to do things. Went to college with the idea I was going to be a veterinarian. While I was trying to get into vet school, I went into food science and started having a ball. I was doing all kinds of wild stuff. I was a good thermodynamics engineer. I knew heat really well. I don't know how I came to be good at that. You know, you usually discover you're good at something. So I knew why you could put your hand in an oven, but you couldn't put it in a fryer at the same temperature. And I understood how to make that change. So anyway, I left there, took the first job. I was working my way through school. So the first person or the first company to hire me was Frito-Lay. I didn't have any interest or disinterest in snacks or anything else. I needed a job. And they offered it, and I jumped. And I flew out to Texas and became a new product development engineer in their product development side. That lasted, as usual for me with my temperament, less than a year. I was sitting in meetings all the time where they had 90% of this business and 95% of that business. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I can get 1% of anything. And before I could get used to a paycheck, I decided I'm going to go do this myself. And literally, it was, I think the only thing I owned was a sofa and a refrigerator at that time. And I convinced my wife to, come on, let's move, piled the dogs in the U-Haul. And I actually did a lot of research, which is, you know, the student in me. I studied two cities in each state in the United States, tried to figure out where's the best place to launch a business. And it was my way of making excuses not to do it. In the end, I could have thrown the dart. But Greensboro, North Carolina, and L.A. were the two that had won based on criterion I'd studied and had information to. And off I went. I wasn't going to L.A. So I packed a U-Haul, moved to Greensboro, and I literally started by frying pork skins out of the back of a truck and hustling state fairs and there, everywhere around. Next thing you know, I knew how to make cheese curls, and I bought a cheese curl extruder. So I was making cheese curls and frying pork skins, and my factory was 1,400 square feet, including the office. I hustled, was selling to a lot of local stores and things like that, and the bottom kind of fell out 2-3 years after I'd gotten in the business. Some trade laws changed and companies started paying for shelf space. And I was in these little regional stores, 10 stores, 15 stores, selling fried pork skins and my cheese curls and all this. And they called me in and say, look, Phil, I don't care if you put old socks or tires up there. You've got to be able to pay this slotting fee. You know, and it was like $1,500 a section foot per store. You know, things were going crazy. They called it the snack wars back then. This was in the late 80s, early 90s. Eagle Snack jumped in. They were part of Anheuser-Busch. And between Frito-Lay and Eagle, they were spending $300, $400 million a year on space. Eagle boasted the first year they were not going to make any profit. They were going to take all their money and buy space with it. And so to get into a store, companies were dropping like flies. We had, when I started, there were probably 300 snack manufacturers east of the Mississippi, and within 3 years, most of them were gone. And I was surviving. I was about to close my doors, and this will wrap up how I'd gotten here. And a friend of mine in Texas who knew I was struggling, I couldn't pay the rent, couldn't do anything. He says, you know, Weight Watchers is looking for diet snack and can't get anybody to do it right. Here's their criteria and here's their address. So I started sending off these samples. I knew how to do what they were wanting to do. And I was literally about to close the door. The phone rang one late afternoon. The guy goes, I'm the vice president of Heinz, HCA Heinz Marketing. We own Weight Watchers. Who are you? And I told who I was. He explained that they'd seen over 140 samples, had never seen. We were the only ones hitting it every time. They said, we want to fly and talk to you. And I said, you better hurry up because we're getting ready to lock the doors. And they flew in and didn't leave. In this tiny little bay, they had lawyers come in, signed agreements for us to start making products for them for Weight Watchers. And over the course of the next 3 or 4 years, I launched 27 products internationally for them, where we did all the development work, everything, okay, start to finish. And so you will know, those products were terrible. They were just in the, they didn't care. This was, they didn't care. Even when they said, well, people that are having to eat this, they have to eat this and they need a certain amount of fiber and they can't have this thing. So it didn't matter that you could put it in a bowl and put it next to your dog food and the dog wouldn't touch it. You know, it was just really, really bad stuff. But it was all there was. And there was always an attitude, this was only a mandated thing. So you didn't have to care whether or not it tasted good. People left Weight Watchers eventually. We were their best kept secret for a long time. We barely grew because they even kept saying, you know, we were working like two shifts and running 60,000 cases a month, but still very small. And no, don't grow this, Phil. Don't grow this because I don't think this is going to last. It's just a fad. That's Weight Watchers talk. So eventually people left there and they'd go to like Physicians Weight Loss and LA Weight Loss and Nutrisystem and hearing. They all came back, you know, and pretended like nobody had ever heard of me. And so over about a 10-year period, we had developed and launched well over 200 products internationally for all these companies. So that took me to my fat and sassy and lazy. We never got real big. We're a small company. We're, because this stuff comes and goes. If it got very big, the company would take it. So we did stuff for Kraft or Pillsbury or so on. If it gets very large or bigger than what they anticipated, they'd bring it in-house and say, sorry about that. And then the other thing that happens is a lot of these companies, food is not their primary business. And so they change all the time. This year, it's zero trans. Next year, it's high fiber. So you're on this roller coaster all the time. You know, you have to know what's coming 5 years out and be ahead of it. So we're flipping products. We had one customer that we launched 42 products over a 10-year period. You know, and they were all good, better. I would say better. But so anyway, to your question, you know, since the inception and early 80s, I always colored outside the lines. It was kind of my attitude about things. And I started hiring people with disabilities, and that's a story in and of itself. It was following a crazy incident that occurred. We'd fried pork skins for the GOP convention, and cameras from a local studio came down to film it, and while they were filming it, my crew ran into the woods. Half of them were wanted by the law. They didn't want to be seen on camera, and we ended up in the newspaper, and they asked if somebody from Volk Rehab had called me and said, hey, we're looking for somebody to participate in the job fair, no obligation, just, you know, they just need interview practice. And I'm going, I'm used to that. And we go through people like, I'll come down there. So, and I ended up hiring a person that was severely disabled, legally blind and all that, and he blew circles around half the crew. So that kind of changed who we were too. And over the course of those many years, over half our staff are people with special needs. They get really high wages. So that gives you the backdrop to Wicked Chris, because what happened was I was having lots of fun developing products all the time. But it's not a very sustainable business, even as an entrepreneur. You know, you're going through 20 leads a month. You know, three stick, two don't. They're here for 3 years, and then they're gone. And I realized that I had 26 families that were very dependent on me. And a lot of them were, nobody else would hire them, and they had families. And some of them were now second generation. And I knew I had to make the company bigger than about me. And I saw huge opportunities in Better For You Snacks. There still was this attitude that it didn't really matter, that consumers were stupid and they wanted cheap things. And a lot of the people I was developing for were like capital equity groups and stuff now who were interested in just flipping it. They didn't really care about sustainability. Give me something cheap I can throw against the wall and sticks long enough I can get 3x earnings for it and let some other fool deal with the problem later. And so a lot of what I was developing was still for companies that didn't want to invest in what consumers really wanted. They were serious. They learned how to read labels. They really do want it to taste great. You know, they love to snack. They love all these things, but, you know, there are some serious issues in the U.S. population with diets and too many calories and too many calories from fats. And snacks have been a big culprit in this for 30 years. They've been known as junk food. I mean, if you look at the back of the label of a potato chip, right, it's 40%+ fat, which is more than bacon or ground beef or anything. Nobody ever questions it, you know, and this is the back. Well, I knew how to get rid of all that and still end up with products where you go, I'll put that up against a Dorito or this or that. I don't care. That's what I did. And that was the birth of Wicked Chris, is I really started over. I cashed everything in 7 years ago because it took every dime I had. I knew I was going to go up against the same people I had been producing for, but I knew how to do it right. Hired great design people that did the artwork and this. These are all some of the best behavioral scientists in the world. You know, I had made so many friends, and I'd tell them what I wanted to do, and they'd say, great, I hope you have $500,000 for this design. And I'd laugh and say, no, I got like $5,000. And they would do it anyways. Say, great, we're going to do this. So anyway, that is kind of what led to the birth of this, was really a rebirth. This has been a do-over for me, right? This is a do-over. I wanted to launch a brand when I was 26, and it all fell apart, and I'm going to do it again. Crazy.
I find that so interesting, and there's so many points I do want to touch on. I definitely want to dive into the conversation of, you know, you have a team of people with disabilities, and how has that shaped Wicked Snacks?
Oh my gosh. First of all, having a crew that cares is unique. You know, in fact, it was interesting because years ago, somebody had asked, what was the most difficult thing about starting a business like this? If anybody had told me the most difficult thing was hiring people, I would have said, no way. That's the easy part. And the reality is it's the most complex part. It causes more collisions. It's very, very complex. And hiring people that care, that have a heart, makes all the difference. They become embedded in what we do every day, the quality of what we do. They understand and know our customers. For example, we meet every Wednesday, the entire crew meets, and we talk about our customers. And, oh, this is going to be on sale at this store, and we're doing this for this. They know our customers. And don't forget, they like to have this one in front of that one and all. And so just having that enthusiasm and that level of care is very, very powerful. We don't have turnover here to speak of. We've got people that retire here. You're either for 2 weeks or 25 years because you get embedded into a company where you go to work every day knowing this is your family too. You know, we always talk about we leave our problems at the door with our other family. Now we come into this family. It's a chance for you to take a breath. I get asked, in fact, by other companies all the time and governors and different places to how do we do this? And I think a lot of your listeners would be interested in this, that I discovered very early it happened early while I was doing things, is when somebody that's able-bodied comes in the door to apply for a job, you're very interested in what they can do. Have you done this? Can you drive a forklift? Have you done this? Have you done that? Whatever it happens to be. As soon as somebody with a disability comes in the door, your mind inverts and you start paying attention to what they can't do. And you focus on the things they can't do and you're not paying attention to what they can do. Okay. Forget about what they can't do. Nobody ever asked me what I can't do. And believe me, there's a lot. So what I did that's different that really helps is somebody comes through the door. Hey, can you make these boxes, label this, do that? Can you move this? Yes. Boom. I don't care about the rest of it. And what I find is that people are capable of a lot more than they're given an opportunity to do. That first guy that I hired, his name was David. We had a holiday party every year. The first holiday party, we were running for Weight Watchers at the time, 22 different products, and everybody I had in the warehouse would load these trucks, and they were always wrong. I put this guy, David, on it and got him an oversized calculator because he couldn't see. He said, here's the manifest and what they need on the truck. Got a call 4 months later from Weight Watchers says, who do you have loading the trucks cut now because they're always correct? So his parents come to a holiday party, want to know what he's doing. And I say, oh, he's in charge of shipping and receiving now. He deals with all the manifest, does all the paperwork, brings it up front to accounting. No, not our son, David. What's he doing? I said, that's what he's doing. And they said, well, he can't do that. I said, don't you tell him that because he does it every day. So I've learned that. You don't know what people could do. You know, they've been told their whole life they can't do it. Yes, they can. Just give them a chance. So it's a blight.
No, yeah, I love that. And, you know, people given the opportunity, they're able to do so much more than what you think they're capable of. And oftentimes we sell people short.
Absolutely. So that's a trick is finding what people are good at, make them fall in love with what they're doing and watch them just explode.
I love that. And walk me through your thought process on having half your team, you know, be people with having disabilities, and what inspired you to give them a chance?
Well, it started quite by accident when those people ran out during a photo shoot. And I was having a conversation with Jack Daniels in the other room, knowing that things were on fire and, you know, what am I going to do? You know, the turnover was whack. And I got that call. And the first guy that I talked to was boasting in this interview process about cleaning bathrooms at the Holiday Inn third shift. But they were closing this Holiday Inn and he was in a panic. And I'm thinking to myself, anybody that can get excited about cleaning bathrooms third shift at a hotel, what have I got to lose? And that was really my awakening because he came in and he started blowing people away. He didn't want to take breaks. He didn't want to take lunch. He didn't want to go home at the end of the day. He was having so much fun because I'd turn him loose and say, sweep that floor over there if you want. You can go help them make boxes, this, that. And for long, he was the star of the planet. And all these people that thought they were getting away with minimal effort looked at themselves in the mirror. And they realize, here's a guy that's making me look foolish. And they either quit because they couldn't handle it, or they started doing better. And when they quit, I would call VR and just say, send somebody else down. I didn't interview. I didn't do anything. I ended up with a guy that had, he couldn't speak. He couldn't hear. He had cerebral palsy. So walking across a room was a project. But I needed somebody that could take cartons and put them in the boxes at the end of a glue machine and inspect the dates on them. He did that all day. He's king, you know, and eventually he ended up getting a job as a manager at a pizza inn. And here was a guy that nobody would talk to. Nobody would hire him. Forget it. And just gave him a chance and he bloomed.
I love that. What's one story, maybe small, maybe big, from someone on your team that showed you you were on the right path?
Well, I think that at a time when we were having lots and lots of turnover, this same individual I talked about, at 4:30, the building was like a vacuum. People would race out of there. And one rainy, cold day, it was like a freezing, like rain. I came around to lock up the break room, and this guy was sitting there shivering, sopping wet, and crying. And I walked, and he couldn't speak, so he asked to get a pad and write to me. And I wrote to him and asked him what was wrong, and he said it was too cold. He couldn't deal with it. I found out that he was walking a mile across a major intersection from his place where he lived, our plant, every day, coming and going. He would get up at 3:30 and 4 in the morning, and this is a guy that had serious cerebral palsy. He could barely, he's dragging one leg. He didn't want to tell me because he was afraid I wouldn't hire him if I thought he had a transportation problem. But it was just so cold, he was going to freeze before he got home. He would leave every day at 4:30 with everybody else and get home at like 8 o'clock. You know, he had to walk a mile. So, I mean, that was a defining moment for me. I sat and I recognized just how determined, and to your point, you know, people are not given chances. And, you know, I needed people with that kind of heart. He never had to walk again. He had to ride every day. I made sure of that. But it changed my attitude for people that really want to be integrated as part of the community and part of something. You know, here's somebody that puts, you know, real meaning to that thought. And I met so many like him afterwards that it's frightening. They're so determined to be a part of life, and they want your dreams, and your dreams become their dreams.
That's incredible. And I also find that very inspiring. You know, finding those kinds of people that are that determined, and, you know, you want to give them a chance, you want to give them the opportunity and make their lives easier as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, you don't think about it until somebody tells you you can't do something. And imagine getting up and tell somebody telling you can't go to work, you can't get a check, you can't do any of these things, you know. And it's life-changing. And so just being able to get a check. I have one guy, supposedly he could only work one day a week. He was non-communicative. He would just stand and panic. And within 4 months, I just threw him into the crowd and said, well, I'll see you in a few hours, and told him what he needed to do and all. Now he has to get permission. He wants to work 4 days and 5 days and this. And I'm going, he's embedded with, he talks to people now and everything else. His mother met me about 3 weeks ago out in the parking lot crying because she said, you know, I don't understand what you did. And I said, I did nothing. I just made him part of life, you know, and he worked the rest of it out on his own. So he's going to get a driver's license next week, by the way. And he was a guy that couldn't even, and I believe he'll be able to drive just fine. He's going to be fine. So it's just very exciting. I mean, it's why I get up every morning is, you know, and Wicked Crest has become, it's really a symbol of that in so many ways out in the community and in the world. We're starting to go e-commerce a lot now, and this is our big trick. Everybody's very excited. And I told them they got to all become influencers now because we got, I said, we got to get the word out. So they're all figuring out how they can do social media. So that's gonna be my next fun thing to watch.
I love that. Talk to me about how you define success, not just in sales, but also the lives you touch and, you know, the mission that you serve with Crisps.
Yeah, that's a great question too. I've known a lot of people that started business through the years, you can imagine, and survived a lot of crazy things. I've seen a lot of really dark days. And what I've discovered is if your metric is money, as you start a business, you're not going to last very long. The one thing, through all the things I was going through, I was always careful not to lose money, to make sure that I was never deep into debt. I didn't allow myself to make those mistakes, only because I always felt compelled I had to make sure I could pay for everything. But it was motivation. It was driven by wanting to continue to do this. And in fact, you know, so the real metrics are being able to make a contribution in life. I firmly believe that, you know, you're not going to be remembered for all the pictures that were made about you. You're not going to be remembered for all the money you made. Nobody cares, you know. And I also believe in that saying that you die twice. You know, the first time when you take your last breath and the second time when nobody speaks your name anymore. And some people live a long, long time. And I think people make the change in life to make life better for everybody. You don't rely on governments. You don't rely. It's up to us to do the things we need to do to make it right. And, you know, we've built that universe here, and I'm proud of it. It's got to be here 100 years from now. My goal is to gift this company to the employees. You know, I think Hershey's and some other companies have done that. That's my plan. You know, we have guys come up and they want to buy it and they want to do this and they want to flip that. You're going to mess it all up. I need to get the brand growing enough so that it's sustainable. You know, we're about a third of the way there now, so I got my work cut out for me. But Wicked Crisp can get big enough with enough people buying it, then it will take care of itself. It can grow on its own. And that's my goal now, is to get its legs so they don't have to worry.
Absolutely. I love that way of thinking. And you did touch upon legacy, and I do want to dive into that. If someone asks, what's your legacy, what do you hope people say about Wicked Crisps or about you?
I think it's really important. I would love my legacy to be somebody who helped, somebody who cared, you know, they gave back. You know, you hear it a lot in different things, but I'm never happier than when I've made somebody's world better. It's so enlightening and exciting, and I want to remember how I did it so I can make it happen again. So if anything, it's that thought of giving, the power of giving and how much it makes life fulfilling, and then how much better it makes everybody's life. And so my legacy, I hope, will be that I invested all these years and all those crazy nights and work with the idea that in the community, there are things that help the community grow, you know.
I love that. You're really a man of the community.
So now I just need some really good influencers. I'm learning about that all the time now. It's a totally different universe for me because, you know, in retail forever, and now I'm trying to learn how to sell online. So I got to learn about TikTok and all these things. The guys my age, I have trouble texting. So it's a little different for me, but I'm learning fast. So we're going to do that. We want this to be an international product where everybody goes, wow, this is great.
And that's a great point you do touch upon. Where do you see Wicked Snacks in 5 years? Obviously,
I really think that, you know, right now I know that as it relates to the product, not to belittle competitors, I don't think there's anybody close to us technically or the finished product. If you try Wicked Crisp, you'll see that it separates itself from a lot of people in our section of Better For You, because it's designed to put into mainstream snacks and compete. and at price points that are not elite. See, there's a lot of people that don't believe they can afford to eat healthier, and I believe everybody should have those options. You know, I try to get into dollar stores with as much aggression as I do into other stores, and I try to keep price points low for that very reason. This has to be for everybody. And so my goal is that in the next 5 years, we need to be double or triple our size and self-sustaining, you know, not having to rely on contract manufacturing or developing something for somebody else. To do that, we have to get to $20 to $30 million in sales, which sounds like a lot. Yeah, and I think in our business, right now, the Better For You snack world, for example, is at nearly $12 billion with a B. And, you know, we're looking for, you know, to get to 20 million. It seems simple enough, but in retail world, you know, the aggressiveness out there, small companies that don't have funding and financing and all that, we have to sell based on our merits. And it's really difficult. There's a lot of pay to play. Industries are, all industries, I'm sure, are like this, you know. Music industry is notorious for that, but most industries are controlled by a handful of companies, and there's a reason for that, and they make it really tough for companies that don't have money to build a brand in the communities. This is one of the reasons we're focusing on e-commerce a lot now. Almost half of the business in our universe is bought online. So I need to catch up and figure out what I can do to make that happen. We've rebuilt our website. We've got some good social media content starting. Now I have to build awareness, which is the tricky part. You know, because I don't know Kim Kardashian. Yeah, it's really tough. So it's ground zero stuff. How do we do this?
No, absolutely. And, you know, despite the challenges and the hurdles, your approach to accessibility and sustainability, I think it's very, very admirable. And, you know, when I was doing research for Wicked Crisps, you know, I took a look at the website and it looks pretty modern. And so I think you guys are on the right track.
Yeah, we just totally had it rebuilt recently, because when we built it 8 or 9 years ago, it was about information. Websites were built to give you people information. And now they have to be built for commerce. You know, so you got to have a button where you can buy me and this sort of thing. And so we had it all redone. It was very time consuming and unnerving a bit, but it actually just started about a week ago. Maybe it went live 2 weeks ago. We've got a Shopify account now. I'm learning how to do all the different pay systems and all that so people can buy direct. And then we also have it on Amazon and on Walmart's e-commerce and now Target. So it's building awareness. I believe our dream can be realized just by finding ways to get our word out to the community, to let people know this is who we are. Try our products. You won't be disappointed, you know, and see if we can build a following. You know, that's my goal. I'm going to find a way.
Absolutely. And I don't think you'll have a hard time with that. I mean, the crisps, they look very tasty.
Thank you. We're really proud of them. We've had a lot of celebrities that love it, but they won't let us use their photographs. We sent half a truckload to Willie Nelson's birthday party 2 years ago. All these musicians love that. Their agents won't let us use their pictures. Steph Curry buys sweet potato. You know, Steph Curry buys our sweet potato. Chris, he had them at a big party in Miami, sends me all these photos, all these basketball players have it. I can't use the pictures. I said, man, this would be great. I could put it on social media. He says, no, you can't. That's, oh my God. Oh, geez. So I have to figure it out. So I'm sure we'll come up with something.
I'm sure you will. Well, Phil, this has been an incredible conversation. Where can people find you?
Oh, boy. You know, a fun, good start is a 3-minute video you may have run into called Wicked Chris, A Story of Impossibilities. It really gives you a sense of the culture of our, it was done several years ago. It's a 3-minute video worth watching. And then you can go straight to our website and buy now. In the South Atlantic region, you'll find us in a lot of stores. So if you don't see it in a grocery in the Southeast, but after that, it may be a TJ Maxx or something like that, you might find it. But please go to our website. We'll cut a great deal and deliver it straight to your door. So that's a great way to start.
I love that. And we'll have all the link in our description. And
excellent.
Sure, they won't miss it.
I'd love to see some orders pink. That would be great.
I do. Well, Phil, thank you so much for your time. And I hope you have a great one.
No, it's a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me. You take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.